Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Every parent dreams of having the perfect child, the perfect, healthy, happy family. But sometimes life throws out challenges that test and challenge us. And that was certainly true for Kate Swenson when her firstborn son was diagnosed with autism. Despite the difficulties, the tears, sometimes anger and frustration, Kate says living with autism has brought her and her family many joyous moments and hearts full of love. She's joining us today to talk about her new memoir, Forever Boy, a mother's memoir of autism and finding joy. I have to say, it's such an inspiring story. You know, I don't have autism around me. I don't even have children, but I still found this such an inspiring story. It's a story of resilience and really a true testament to the power of love. Kate says more than anything, she's learned through this journey that she's exactly who she's supposed to be, and her son Cooper is exactly who he's meant to be. So Kate Swenson is the founder of a popular blog called Finding Cooper's Voice. She's been writing that for a long time. And she, of course, speaks regularly and writes about autism, parenting, and motherhood in many publications. And again, we're talking about her new book today, Forever Boy, a mother's memoir of autism and finding joy. And here's my guest, Kate Swenson. Kate Swenson, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so pleased to have you. This is such an inspiring story. Forever Boy is a memoir of motherhood and unconditional love. It's certainly not without some sadness and anger or disappointment, because it's about your journey as a whole, and life has all of those elements for all of us. But the book's so inspiring, and not just for parents of children with special needs, but for anyone, because it shows what can be gained with the kind of commitment and love and dedication, resilience that you've put into this. So job well done.
Thank you. Well, and I think in so often in life, you know, we imagine what it's going to look like, right? We're going to get married and get this job and have this many kids. And when it doesn't work out, which it often doesn't, we have to pivot. And I think it's really a story of just, you know, accepting and being happy with what we have.
Right, right. And it took you a while to get there. We'll talk about that. But let's just share with listeners, you have four children. Cooper, of course, has autism. He was about, or you were about 40 weeks when they induced the pregnancy. Is that right?
Yeah, I was full-term baby.
Yeah. And so you write in the book that the first time you held him, within the first few seconds, you knew something was not quite right. Something was different. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and I've actually heard that from other mamas too, now that I've, you know, really widened my circle of special needs moms. But when I looked down at him, he had a pretty traumatic delivery, struggled to breathe when he was born, and just took a few minutes to really get him going, and then we were fine, right? He was placed in my arms. But when I looked down at him, I didn't know the word autism. I wouldn't have known it then, but he definitely looked confused, almost like this world didn't make sense. His life is a newborn. So from right away, I could tell that something was different.
Mm-hmm. And so were the medical team around him? I mean, you do talk about this a little in the book, but what was the general feeling from the medical team around him at that time?
So that he was fine, definitely fine. And he was. He had a traumatic delivery, first-time mom, so it was, he was a big baby. And once he was out and wrapped up and swaddled, and he seemed fine. But the first thing that we noticed immediately was he never figured out breastfeeding. His mouth could not figure that out. So that was a really big challenge right away.
Mm, yeah. You write on your website, there's a quote out there, you say, when you have a child diagnosed with something, anything, your world changes in an instant. The world becomes smaller. You feel alone, as though you're the only one going through this. What point did the doctors actually first say the words autism to you?
So a doctor didn't. That's what's so bizarre. You know, your pediatricians only see your kiddos, you know, once every couple months as they get older, less than that as time goes on. And even though I was bringing up concerns, Cooper, he did make eye contact, and he did point, and he did acknowledge other people. So I was told he was just a late bloomer, that he was just behind, he was a boy, he was lazy. But I knew something bigger was going on. I could feel it. So I made the appointment on my own, almost kind of in secret, because I just didn't know if I felt guilty. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I should be doing this or not. And it took about 6 months to get him in, and he was diagnosed right away with autism.
And what did that, did you feel then, well, you know, some kind of relief in that you knew that what was wrong? Or tell us how that felt for you. I can't even imagine.
So I had been fighting for so long, and that's what it really was. It was a fight for appointments and therapies and someone to take me seriously, that I felt relief. I truly did. I felt like, okay, now we know, and we can get him the help that he needs. And I just assumed, like so many parents do, that the help would just be like, okay, now you're going to do A, B, C, and D, and we're going to tell you exactly what to do. And it was really just a hurry up and wait. No one told us what to do. We went home and we waited. And that just baffled me. It just baffled me.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I was surprised to some extent to read that in your story, and yet, and not in other ways, because we've had not autism in our family, but Parkinson's disease, you know, a similar kind of thing that people don't want to acknowledge to start with. And then you have to try and figure all these missing pieces out yourself and the best therapies and all that stuff. But what surprised me, I think, was, or shocked me, was when you took him to kindergarten. And I mean, it sounded just like the most awful traumatic experience, not just for Cooper, but for you also, because not only were you dealing with somebody who didn't really welcome you, but you were dealing with somebody who obviously had no understanding of autism at all. Tell us about that experience, and what's the importance of putting kids with autism or any learning challenges into what they call, as you put in the book, real classes?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I always tell parents now, knowing what I know, that kindergarten is a really big, it's the first time you'll see really if your child has significant delays. You may have heard it, but you haven't really seen it. In kindergarten, you know, children are expected to sit and do certain things and, you know, follow the rules. And so when we went to the kindergarten open house, I could tell right away that my son, I just felt like it wasn't the right setting for him. It was at a park, and it was loud and wild and fun, and kids were waiting with their school supplies, and my son had no idea what school supplies were or why we were there, and the teacher just didn't acknowledge us and did not give us any grace. And that was a really hard moment for me, because I felt like, you know, these are supposed to be our allies. This is supposed to, you know, help us through, and it was almost as if she made it harder for us. And then going through the open house, the kindergarten, that was just as hard too. And I knew right away it wasn't the right setting for him, but I didn't know what else to do.
It is eye-opening, and I'm glad that you address that to the detail that you do in the book, because I'm sure many, many, many parents and families go through the same thing, expecting... I have a friend whose daughter is 15 and a half now, but she's developmentally, I think, like a two-year-old. And okay. I mean, she's really had to navigate that along the way. You know, she still is in diapers and at the age of, you know, 15, whatever. And listening to the challenges that she's had along the way and reading your story, we've got so much room for improvement to walk parents through that journey. Your book is wonderful, and I'm going to recommend it to a friend who does a lot of work with autism. And I wonder what this experience was like sharing this, because it's very, very personal. I'm sure it was very emotional at times writing it. Tell us about that experience for you.
I'll tell you, writing it was very emotional because I relived all the hardest moments of my little boy's life and my life, and I put them all out on paper, and I really dove back into those feelings that I had hid from. Honestly, I just didn't want to feel. So in a way, it was therapeutic, which I've heard from other moms of older kids now, like Cooper, that they're really going back and healing, which has been one of the most positive things I've heard. But it was a super emotional process, and when I read the book as a whole now, I'm like, oh my goodness, we went through some stuff.
Yeah.
I've been a blogger for all of Cooper's life pretty much. So when you write in snippets, it's different. When you piece it together, it's like holy moly.
Yes, and I'm guessing this the book really was spurred by your blog finding Cooper's voice, right?
Yep, so a lady found me online who has a friend who's a book agent, and she recommended me, and it was a beautiful story of flying to New York City and meeting her and, you know, signing a book contract and writing, and it all came from this little boy, which is so amazing.
Yeah. Forever Boy, A Mother's Memoir of Autism and Finding Joy. Now, at some point, Kate, you write, you realize it wasn't Cooper, your son, that needed to transform, it was you. Tell us a little about that experience.
So when you have a child diagnosed with something, or and it could be a parent with Alzheimer's, it could be a spouse with something else, all the focus is on the child or the person with the disability, right? As it should be, getting them services, getting them help, getting them what they need to be happy and live great lives. But what happens is, there is so much emphasis on put on catching up or being like everyone else or fitting in. And I finally realized that Cooper was exactly who he was supposed to be. There was no non-autistic Cooper and autistic Cooper. There was just Cooper. And it was me that needed to change. I needed to become the mom that he needed me to be. And our whole family did too. And once we realized that, we entered just a really happy place.
Mm-hmm. So he's the eldest of the four children. What have you told the other children about his special needs? I'm wondering how you navigate that kind of thing with your younger kids.
Yeah, so every family is going to do this differently, but I'm asked this all the time. And I'll tell you a story. So I interviewed an autistic adult one time, and she told me that she'd had a really challenging teenagehood. She was bullied a lot, teased a lot, she couldn't figure out who she was or how she fit in. And then one day she was in the guidance counselor's office and she saw her file folder and it said autism. And she had no idea that she had autism. No one, her parents had never told her. They had sheltered her from it. And she begged me to always talk about it and share it with our family and share it with the world. That's one of the reasons why I do what I do, is I don't want it to be a dirty word. I don't want it to be hidden. I don't want it to be secret. So we have talked about autism openly and honestly with Cooper and his brothers, and now his little sister's still little, but it with everyone, because I don't want him to be embarrassed of who he is. I don't want Sawyer to be embarrassed of his brother. I want this to be something that we can try to understand.
Right. Right. I would imagine that would have been quite traumatic for that person to suddenly realize, well, maybe, you know, the issues I had were because of this, and had I understood that, it might have been easier.
Exactly. She was bitter, and I don't blame her. But here's the deal, and I don't ever, people listening are going to have children that are, you know, higher functioning than Cooper, which means maybe they are able to speak or be in general ed classes, and it's a slippery slope knowing what to do as a parent. There's no rule book, so I think you just have to do what's in your heart.
Yeah, well, I love this in the book where you said that learning to say my son has autism was really difficult, and you would add at the end, but he's very high functioning. And you write, our heart eats lies when we're hungry, and I was ravenous. I thought that was very powerful.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you first learn about autism, when you first Google it, even probably today, you'll learn that it's a spectrum, and you, every parent obviously wants their child to be the happiest and healthiest and, you know, most independent that they can. So I just convinced myself, I'm like, well, he's high functioning and we don't have to worry, and it wasn't true at all, but I did that, I would feel better each time I would say it. Like, it would lessen the blow of the diagnosis
right
away, but I was lying to myself.
Right. And I know you stress through the book that, you know, each case is so individual. Like, for example, one of the things you took away from the kindergarten experience is that it's okay to recognize that, you know, public education isn't always the answer for everybody, and we don't always have to do things the same way everybody else has done. And, you know, parents are going to have to handle this in different ways. And then, of course, you enter, you know, a marriage relationship into the situation, and that causes a lot of problems for a lot of people. And you certainly had challenges there, too.
Mm-hmm. I think the education piece is so important to touch on, because everyone goes to school, right? I mean, we can just say that. Every child grows to school. And when you have a child, for whatever reason, that doesn't fit in that, you know, square peg, round hole, however you say it, if they don't fit in, and it's not always just autism, it could be a kid with other behaviors or
right,
other struggles,
right.
And it's really isolating to have to step off that path and be like, okay, we're going to figure out something else. And I remember, it was, of all the things that I went through in Cooper's 11 years, going against the school district was, in the beginning, was one of the hardest things. It was the most scary.
Yes. Did you feel a lot of pressure to, like, conform and do it, you know, the way?
Well, yeah, and it's like, well, it works for everyone else. Everyone else's kids are just fine. And I knew in my gut, and that's what I always tell parents, trust your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just not the right setting for him. And we ended up finding a great setting. And now, as a fifth grader, he's back in school. So, you know, we've come full circle. But I think, I always tell parents, I'm like, step off that path with conviction and bravery, and step off and let your child lead, and it may lead you right back.
Yeah, I mean, you know your child better than anybody. I've had this conversation with my friend and her daughter too. You know, that you know your child better than anybody else. You're with them 24/7, and what works for one doesn't work for another. So let's talk about the, you know, what that did to you as a person and how that changed you, because with all this, it is, you do feel like you're in a constant battle at times, I would imagine, you know, fighting to get better treatment, fighting to get better answers, fighting to get better education. How has that changed you as a person over the whole?
Well, I had someone say to me during the pandemic, because I was complaining about how, complaining is the wrong word, I was saying how my son had lost all his services and homeschool didn't work and he couldn't Zoom, and it was like he was just forgotten. I referred to him in a lot of my blogs as the forgotten children. And oh my goodness, my mind just went blank. Oh, how has it changed me? So this person said to me, it's like, all you special needs parents, all you ever do is just fight or complain about the things you don't get. And what they don't understand is we're fighting for basic rights.
Yeah.
We're fighting for Cooper to go to school and for him to have a safe bus ride and a person to be with him, to cross the street with him and to go to restaurants. Like, we're fighting for these basic rights. It's not big grandiose things. It's not like anything glamorous. And it's really put me, you know, off. I'm in a fight or flight mode a lot of the times, and you'll hear that from other moms and dads. It's like, well, we're kind of always waiting for someone to say something to us or kick us out or lose a service or a support. It really has changed me. It's hardened me in ways. It's given me more compassion in other ways. It's done a lot.
It's made you a tiger mom.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I remember the first time I had to advocate a doctor and tell the doctor that they were wrong, and it still terrifies me. It's not who I am at my core. I am like, okay, yes sir, yes ma'am.
No.
So it was weird for me.
I understand that, and I'll just share with you that over the years I've learned through several different incidences from an aunt who was a very specialized nurse with preemie babies, and my uncle, her husband, had a stroke, and I learned from watching her, she had to fight just to get him shaved and not given up on, because, you know, they gave up on him and he was barely 70, and he lived till he was 85. And I credit her for doing that. And I've also talked with many, many doctors over the years, many health specialists, mental and physical health, who've said, you have to advocate. You can't just take things at face value. And so I'm glad that you're out there letting people know about this, because it's something that I kind of preach from the the back wings whenever somebody goes into hospital. It's like you've got to have a an advocate there for you, and don't just take their word as gospel, and you have to question things. It's really important.
And it's okay to be a squeaky wheel. It's okay because you think a doctor could have 100 patients, a teacher could have 100 students, and they probably don't know how much you're struggling or your child is struggling or whatever it may be. So you can do it with kindness and respect.
Mm-hmm.
Be a squeaky wheel. I think it's important.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about sugarcoating the reality, because I know this. It's very hard for some people to ask for help or admit they even need to ask for help. Your son has severe nonverbal autism, and yet you glossed over many of those challenges with family and friends, as many people would under those circumstances. You write that you felt you didn't even have time to, you know, sustain relationships. There wasn't anything left for you at the end of the day. Talk to us about the importance of recognizing what's going on and asking for help. And what's the best way to approach that?
I always tell moms now, I just did a speech yesterday, and I was like, there is no medal given out at the end of life for the person who did it alone. There is nothing wrong with asking for help. And I was very much a martyr. I thought that no one would understand Cooper or me or our struggles. And we just really turned inward. And we stayed home a lot. We didn't go out in the community because it wasn't safe. And there were, I mean, all the reasons were very valid. But because of it, no one knew how much we were struggling and how much Cooper was struggling. And I just encourage parents now to, I mean, reach out, tell your own mom and dad, tell someone in your life, have people in your life, teachers, whoever it may be, because this is hard stuff and it's a marathon. And we're going to be lovingly providing care for Cooper as long as we are alive. And that's something that we're grateful to do. We're happy to do it. But we have to give ourselves grace, and we're no good to anybody if we don't take breaks. So tell people when it's hard. It's okay to do that. You're not complaining.
No, absolutely. It's often said that men and women handle things differently, and you talk about Jamie, your husband, not being able to feel his emotions, you know, when you're going through all of this. How eventually did that change, and how eventually did he open up about it? Because it's something I've seen certainly with people.
Well, I think so often in a marriage, you know, it seems like in mine, other ones I've talked to, there's often an emotional one and then one that's more of an even keel. And I think that's a good thing, because if you have two people that are emotional, you're probably going to have a pretty bumpy
right.
ride. So in that sense, we're very lucky. But my husband was just definitely didn't feel all the big feelings right away. He wasn't as scared about autism. He didn't dive into autism as much. And it doesn't mean he didn't love Cooper or wasn't there for everything. It just means he was like, obviously this will be okay. Like, everything's always okay, you know? And it really affected us in hard ways. I immersed myself completely, and I say turned invisible, just being so focused on Cooper's care and advocating for him. And I felt like my husband kept on living and kind of forgot about me. That's how I felt back then. So we ended up taking some time apart, and we did get divorced and ended up getting remarried to each other years later. But I will tell you, the funny part of your question is he's still not emotional. He's still very much an even keel kind of guy, and I've just learned to navigate that.
Well, he's a banker, right?
Yeah, insurance agent now. So thing.
I joke because I used to be a banker.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about being a round peg in a square hole. That was me.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, did you go through, as many people do, you know, why me? What caused this? I want answers as to why this happened. Did you go through that experience at all, Kate?
Absolutely. I had a super viral, beautifully, I think, written post about the whys, and how why is the hardest question you will ever ask, because there is no answer. And I can say with full certainty that Cooper's exactly who he's supposed to be, who he's born to be. He's fantastic. He's going to have a great life. And there are still moments where I will be particularly low, and I'll be like, he's never going to talk to me. Why? Like, why him? And I went through periods where I would see him next to my friend's kids, or my friend's kids, you know, are now entering middle school, and going to middle school dances and playing sports, and Cooper will most likely never do those things. So why him? And I am doing a lot better. I am fully in the land of acceptance. I'm perfectly happy where I am. But grief is not linear. It's a come and go thing. And I still have moments where I feel sad, but I just focus on how happy he is and how blessed we are to have him.
Mm. You, and he's beautiful too. I love this shot on the front of your book. It's just adorable.
Yes,
sweetest. Yes, yes. And so looking from the outside in, you know, people often have judgments about family members or friends and how they should be handling things, you know, what they're doing wrong or how they could improve something. And you wrote a great blog post about photos. It's, you know, a snapshot is just a moment in time or something like that, and how someone somewhere every time you post a photo will find something to critique, whether it's a paper plate or maybe, you know, a sock out of a drawer, whatever. Talk to us a little bit about how you've learned to handle the judgment from other people.
Yeah, so, well, there's online judgment and there's in real life judgment. And
that's true.
I have about a million followers between Facebook and Instagram, so everything I do angers people. I just had a lady send me a picture of my face and show me where my eyebrows should be.
You are kidding me.
Oh, it's awful. So
you are beautiful. Ignore them. Jeez.
You know, that gets tiring. It's kind of, I talked to other, you know, influencers about it, how it just makes you super angsty. Like, if I show this photo, my kid has a, you know, maybe a runny nose, or if his pants aren't clean, or, I mean, it could be anything. So that's very stressful, but you can kind of turn that off, right? But shame in real life, I mean, and that comes, we have less now because Cooper is very happily autistic in the sense that he's 11 years old, and within meeting him within seconds, you're going to know that there is something different about him. And we own that, so we don't get as much judgment as we did when he was 2 and 3, right? Where mm-hmm. it was like, is he a naughty toddler? Is he just acting out? There's less grace given now, but it's also a lot more obvious, if all that makes sense. But I try to remember that most people are kind, and most people are just curious, and answer questions when they come, and educate when I can. So this has taken me years, though, so please know that this well-rounded self that I'm talking about wasn't always this way.
Yeah, I can relate to that, because I remember taking my mom out many times in her wheelchair when she'd start to have a fit of dyskinesia and twitching and writhing all over the place, and people would just stand there with mouths open staring. And like, sometimes I'd want to slap them, and sometimes I'd want to go educate them, and sometimes I could rise above it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So what do you know now Cooper's 11 years old, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you first started this journey with autism?
When Cooper was diagnosed, everything online and everything we were told was somewhat negative. We were never told anything good about this life, about this boy. We were told about all his challenges and his deficits and all these parts that no parent should have to hear all the time. And I wish that someone would have told me that he was going to have a great life, because we're gonna make his life great, and he's going to be successful and contributing and happy. And I think there's just so much, and it doesn't matter what the differences are. It could be anything in this world, right? But it's hard to be different. And we have to focus on, different isn't bad. It's just different.
Right. That's what I used to tell my mom. Yes, yeah. Life has changed, but it's just different, Mom. And she lived very happily with PD for well over 20 years, which is quite unusual. So,
yeah.
How do you restore Kate? You've got 4 kids and a husband. How do you restore Kate? And I'm not talking about grabbing a nap, if ever you can grab a nap. What do you do to fulfill your inner core to sustain you through this journey?
Well, I'm not good at the whole balance thing. So I'm a mom of 4, and my husband and I are both self-employed. We work from home all the time. So we're always working and we're always parenting, which is just hard, because you're kind of always failing and kind of always winning. It's a hard place to be. But I'm a writer. I love writing. I really, truly love sharing about my family. So that's, when that turned to work, that kind of changed me a little bit. So I try to make sure I still enjoy the writing part of it. I try to get outside as much as I can, and I love my friends. I adore my friends. And yes, everything's about kids now, but I still try to get together with them. And if anyone has any secrets to balance, let me know.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 18 years total, I think now, and I've come to the conclusion there is no balance. And you know what? And my interpretation of balance is, if you're happy, it's okay, you know?
Yep.
Because I've been told I work too much. I love my work. If I didn't love it, I wouldn't work so much.
Exactly. We're the same way over here, too. I would never be a good stay-at-home mom. I'm always super respectful and encouraging to stay-at-home moms. So I'm like, I couldn't do it. You guys are awesome. I would go crazy. So I need to work. And so I often feel torn between working and mothering. I haven't quite figured it out yet. I love both, but it's hard.
Hey, you're doing something right. You started your blog, Finding Cooper's Voice. Your mission was to create a safe space for families of children and teens with special needs to come together and laugh, cry, and support each other. What else do you want to accomplish?
Well, just this last year, my associate and I started a nonprofit, which was just, we wanted a way to fill our cup up. And so often when you go through the special needs parenting journey, you're kind of in the trenches for a long time. And my mantra is, once you make it through, help another parent. So we started a nonprofit called the More Than Project, where we essentially raise money in different ways. And typically it's finding a business that employs adults with disabilities. And we sell a product, a bracelet, coffee, something. And we take the proceeds we make, 100% of them, and we give them back. So we either support caregivers or teachers or siblings. And it's been a lot of fun. So that's been good to fill our cup up. And because so often we can get caught up with, like, in the social media racket. And that can be kind of dark sometimes.
Yes, I agree with you. The less time spent there, sometimes the better. So the book is called Forever Boy, A Mother's Memoir of Autism and Finding Joy. And listeners can find out much more about you and your work at findingcoopersvoice.com. Kate Swenson, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
This book is not just for families of kids with autism. Please know that whoever you are, you will probably take something from this book that will really touch you, whether you work with other autistic adults, whether you are a frontline worker and have patients or customers with autism. Please know it really is for everyone. It's always a good thing to educate yourself. So grab a copy.
I would agree with that. I don't even have kids and I took something away from it. So Kate Swenson, like, yay, I said in the beginning, a job well done. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.